Following is a live presentation of CITR News.
CITR 101.9 FM presents News 101, Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast. Now, here's your host, Rita Farkas.
Good evening. Coming up on the program, a four-month strike for the Kelowna Sunripe workers may be wrapping up. And on political commentary, Phil Caudry discusses the recent motion by the Conservatives to extend the Afghan mission to 2011. We'll have all this, plus arts, sports, and your five-day weather forecast coming up in this half hour right here on News 101. But first this evening, we bring you an excerpt from the recent Poverty Olympics held in the downtown East Side on Sunday, February 3rd. News 101's Carrie Baptist was at the event and brings us some coverage of the exciting day.
The 2010 Olympics has been subject to a lot of criticism and protest, especially from those living in the downtown East Side. It is felt by many that the city and provincial governments have failed to live up to the promises they made when the Olympics were initially proposed and voted on. The government has done little to help the poor in Vancouver and make the 2010 Olympics an inclusive event. In early February, the Carnegie Community Association, one of the most prominent social organizations in the downtown East Side, staged a Poverty Olympics to highlight some of the problems residents of the downtown East Side face in Vancouver and the government neglect of poverty and homelessness. For the opening ceremonies of the Poverty Olympics, a plastic torch was lit and the head of the Carnegie Community Action Project, Jean Swanson, spoke.
Now, when Vancouver got the 2010 Olympics, the city, the province, and the federal government made some commitments about housing and inclusion. Then they set up a committee to tell them how to implement their commitments. And the committee was made up of developers, business people, community people, and government. It was called the Inner City Housing Inclusive Committee. And it made some recommendations. Build 3,200 units of new affordable housing. Raise welfare rates 50%. End the rules that are keeping people in need off of welfare. This was a government-created committee. And those recommendations were unanimous, and they were later endorsed by over 100 groups. But when it came to implement the commitments, our government said they couldn't because of financial constraints. Never in living memory have our governments been more financially able to reduce poverty and end homelessness. Never. This poverty that we have here is completely unnecessary. Our provincial government had a surplus of $4 million last year. That's in this tall thing right here. They're spending $4.5 billion on the Olympics, right here. Now there's a column that we don't even have in this graph, and that would be up to about here, and that would be the federal government surplus of $14 billion. We're also holding these Olympics, thanks, Emma, because Mayor Sullivan's Civil City is cracking down on all the things that people have to do to survive when they get welfare, they're cracking down on all the things that people have to do when they can't get welfare, or when they do get welfare and it's too low to live on. He's doing things like locking garbage bins, arresting panhandlers, and getting homeless. Then you look at all the things the government can do when it wants to do something. Oh yes, they can build the RAV line to the airport. How many of you have been to the airport lately? They can build the Squamish Highway. They can spend $8 million on a bus stop in Whistler. They can spend $4.5 billion on Olympic-related costs. And all of this for a game. Yeah. Meanwhile, two homeless people suffered severe burns last week for trying to stay warm in a doorway when their stove exploded.
Shame! Shame!
In the so-called most livable place in the world, people are suffering and dying because of poverty and homelessness. Poverty is not a game. Homelessness is not a game. We're holding these Olympics to tell the world that our governments are ignoring their Olympic commitments and choosing to keep people homeless and in dire poverty. And we're also holding the Poverty Olympics to tell the government that it has a fantastic opportunity. I don't know if any government has ever had this opportunity. The provincial budget is on February 19th. Ending poverty and homelessness could be an Olympic legacy.
The rest of the Poverty Olympics was devoted to staging events, such as the Poverty Line High Jump, Bed Bug Long Jump, Curling for Housing Rights, and, in the next segment, the Welfare Hurdles.
Welcome to the beautiful downtown East Side. We're going to begin our Welfare Hurdles race any moment now. This is a race where penniless, homeless, sick, people unable to read and write will be attempting to jump over hurdles or around hurdles or under hurdles designed to keep them off welfare and hungry and homeless. So once they are over the last hurdle, the welfare worker is waiting to give them their money. The welfare office is open and waiting to give them their money. So how's our athletes doing down there? Are they ready? First we have Stephen, who's representing homeless people. Then we have Sandra, who's representing people who can't read or write. And in lane three, we have Matthew, who's representing people who are sick. Every year, thousands of vulnerable people in BC have to attempt these kind of hurdles. They have these hurdles in their way to getting welfare. And even though they are in dire need, they make it very difficult. So, athletes, are you think you're ready to go? On your mark. Get set. Go. So it looks like no one won the podium today, But look, how about let's give them some medals? Let's give them some medals anyway. What do you think?
At this point, the AIDS rate in the downtown east side is equal to that in Botswana. One-third of all the cases the Vancouver Police Department is called to deal with have to do with mental illness in the downtown east side, where it's thought that most of the population suffers from serious mental problems. It is hard to know, but the current cost estimates say that the province and city government have spent about $1.7 billion for the 2010 Olympics. However, the province did recently commit to spend $80 million to help ease homelessness in Vancouver by buying 11 single-room occupancy hotels and funding supportive housing units. This is to counter recent losses in affordable housing, given that in 2007 alone, 561 low-income housing units were lost in the downtown east side. This is Carrie Baptist for News 101, CITR, Vancouver.
And now with a look at local news, we're joined in studio by News 101 reporter once again, Carrie Baptist.
NDP MLA for the Vancouver Fairview Riding and co-founder of the Happy Planet Juice Company, Gregor Robertson, has thrown in his hat to the ring for the mayoral race in Vancouver. Provincial NDP leader Carol James is lending her support to Robinson and is allowing him to maintain his position as an MLA while he launches his campaign for the November election. Robinson announced that he will be seeking the nomination of the Vision Vancouver Party against Vancouver Parks Commissioner Alan DeGenova and City Councillor Raymond Louis, who are also running for the coveted seat. Robertson's platform promises include putting an end to homelessness in Vancouver, improving the quality of life for the ordinary Vancouver citizen, encouraging entrepreneurship, arts, culture, sports, and making Vancouver the greenest city in the world. For the first time, the Fraser Institute has issued a hospital report card for British Columbia, but the public may not be able to find out what it says. BC Regional Health Authorities will not allow the Fraser Institute to release the names of the hospitals which were included in the study. According to the health authorities, the Fraser study was conducted using improper methodology. They argue that when research is conducted involving BC hospitals, it should be done in a fair and scientifically rigorous manner. The Fraser Institute based their study on measures like the Hospital Mortality Index, but this may not be enough. BC Health Minister George Abbott said that a similar study was done to the Fraser study to the Fraser Institute's was conducted in Ontario and was criticized there for the way the material was compiled.
And parks in Vancouver are about to have a little less money in the bank. The City of Vancouver has asked the Parks Board to slash their budget by $350,000 for the coming year. This comes despite the cost savings from last summer's municipal strike. Commissioner Loretta Woodcock is infuriated by the city's proposal, especially, she says, in light of the $2 million the city, quote, wastes on projects like the Civil City Initiative. For 2006, the net operating budget for the Parks Board was $55.1 million. It's time now for a quick break, but stay tuned to CITR for more news following these public service announcements.
Hi, this is William Shatner. Imagine a children's hospital network that boldly goes where none have gone before, and that's Shriners Hospitals for Children. Shriners Hospitals combine state-of-the-art research and teaching programs with world-class orthopedic burn, spinal cord injury, and cleft lip and palate medical care. At Shriners, tomorrow's medical care is here today. Call 1-800-361-7256 for more information. Shriners, having fun and helping kids.
Well, some of the counties in Florida, evidently there were some questionable voting procedures, and those ballots are being recounted.
The Graduate Student Society is pleased to announce the opening of nominations for GSS Elections 2008.
The UBC Graduate Student Society represents and advocates on behalf of all UBC graduate students to the university, the government, and the public.
We provide academic, professional, social, and recreational services to our members.
The nomination closes February the 8th. So hurry up and file your nominations. You can vote online at Student Service website. Voting starts February 15th.
For more information, please visit www.gss.ubc.ca.
Who did you vote for?
Five 16, and the news continues here on CITR. Workers at the Sunripe plant may soon be back on the job after months of walking the picket line. With more on that story, here once again is Carrie Baptist.
The striking workers of Kelowna's Sunripe fruit juice and snack manufacturing plant may have finally negotiated a deal with their employer after walking off the job 4 months ago. When contract negotiations broke down in November 2007, the jobs of 260 workers were put in jeopardy. But thanks to a new four-year agreement drawn up by their Local 213 union, all of the striking production and maintenance workers may return to work as early as next week. The new deal, which has been approved by 77% of the employees, will see wages increase annually, reaching 12% total by 2012.
And now in political commentary, Phil Caudry discusses the recent motion by the Conservatives to extend the Afghan mission to 2011. Phil weighs the pros and cons of Harper's motion.
Stephen Harper has unveiled a new motion with a hard end date of 2011 for Canada's military mission in Afghanistan, a move aimed at bridging the gap between the Conservatives and Liberals on this issue. The Conservatives currently have a double-digit lead in polls compared to the Liberal Party, which puts them in majority territory. As a result, Harper is putting forward motions of confidence as a means to test the opposition parties and their willingness to have an election. Harper initially did not want to have an end date for the Afghan mission. Initially, Harper did not want to have an end date of withdrawal for the Canadian mission in Afghanistan. In recent days, however, he's trying to reach out to the opposition parties as a way of consensus building. The Liberals have indicated that they're most likely to support this motion. As Stéphane Dion quoted, it represents about 95% of the Liberals' views on the issue. However, I think this is more rhetoric than fact. Dion is obviously not jonesing for an election. His party is down in the polls at 27%, probably the lowest that they can go considering the Liberals' party base. And as a result, he needs to support the Harper government stance on the Afghan mission, whether he agrees with it or not. In the past, Dion has taken a firm stance saying that Canada needs to withdraw as soon as possible from the region. However, it looks like a consensus will be met, and the end date of 2011 will stand for Canada's involvement in Afghanistan. After 6.5 years of combat, 2011 doesn't seem like such a bad day for withdrawal. It gives Canadians time to build the peace in Afghanistan, but at the same time not creating a Vietnam syndrome amongst the Canadian population, where there is no end in sight. The Liberal Party framed it as expropriation of their own motion for Afghanistan. The Liberals are trying to prove they can get results as an opposition party in Parliament. In regards to the Bloc Québécois and NDP, both parties are adamant about keeping the current end date of next February for the Canadian withdrawal. Overall, I don't think the Conservatives have done a great job of bipartisanship in their tenure as government. They've obviously had to compromise being in a minority setting. I would say this is one of the first true consensus pieces of legislation put forward by Harper. It was based on the recommendations by a panel led by former Liberal Cabinet Minister John Mantley, who is very well respected in terms of foreign policy. Mantley has taken a pretty hard stance on Afghanistan, saying that we should continue being there until the mission's done. Even though it is a consensus, it is tough to say whether 2011 is a good day for withdrawal. No one knows how the mission's going to go in the next 3 years. And on top of that, NATO is not releasing metrics in terms of progress in Afghanistan. This is crucial in order for government to make new policy and to reform old ones that don't seem to be working. In Iraq, there are metrics in terms of how the surge is working. This is the kind of information needed for Canada to put together a rational policy in Afghanistan. This is something the Liberals need to jump on before it's too late, and in some ways they may have missed the boat by already supporting the motion. If the Liberals demand metrics of progress, the Conservative government will find itself in a tight corner. They don't have any metrics to provide, and therefore their position on the mission will seem tenuous. However, Dion is being pragmatic, as well as his party, and they don't want to force an election. It's obvious that the Conservatives at this point would form the next government in Canada, possibly in a majority setting. This would suffer a fatal blow to the leadership of Stéphane Dion. And on the Conservative side, the Conservatives need to stop making policies just to stay in power. They need to make policies that are best for Canada. Because in the end, Canadians will observe which policies are working and which are not for Canada, and they will take down a government that is not looking out for their interests. The Conservatives can look out for themselves in the short term, but in the long term, if they're not putting forward the best policies in terms of protecting our troops, in terms of protecting our reputation abroad, and in terms of securing Afghan security, the Conservative Party will suffer a backlash. I urge both Stéphane Dion and Stephen Harper to lead by principle. I'm not saying that I'm principled, but on certain issues such as the Afghan mission, which involves human lives, playing politics is not fair. It's immoral. So while I have to give an A-plus to Harper for bringing about consensus in government, I have to give him a lukewarm grade of a C in terms of basing his policy on sound reasoning. He did look at the John Mantley report. However, we do not have the necessary metrics in order to truly gauge how the mission is going. This is what the opposition parties need to demand. For News 101 Commentary, I'm Phil Caudry.
And thank you, Phil, for that piece. It's now time for another break, but there's still much more to come on News 101. When we come back, Wilson Wong will tell us what's happening in UBC Athletics. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
What do leeks, daffodils, and male chorus singing have in common?
They are all symbols of Wales, and they will come together on the 1st of March, St. David's Day.
The choir, sponsored by the UBC Faculty Women's Club, will perform a benefit concert as a scholarship fundraiser for UBC students. Help the Vancouver Welsh Men's Choir celebrate the occasion at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Vancouver.
The event will be taking place Saturday, March 1st, 2008, 8 p.m. at St. Patrick's Catholic Church, located at 2881 Main Street, Vancouver. To order tickets, call 604-263-9567 or 604-224-3941.
Welcome back to News 101 on CITR. I'm Rita Farkas, coming to you live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight. Right now, it's 5:23 and time for a look back at the past weekend in UBC Athletics. Here's Wilson Wong with Thunderbird Eye on Sports.
Welcome to this Monday's Thunderbird Eye. For the third straight year, the UBC men's basketball team captured the Canada West Pacific Division title at the hands of the Victoria Vikes. After a back-and-forth game one that the Thunderbirds almost blew in the third quarter, UBC responded with a much better effort in game two, an 86-77 win on Saturday. The Vikes wouldn't go quietly with their backs against the wall, closing the gap to just 3 points late in the fourth quarter after a quick 7-0 run. But the Thunderbirds tightened up defensively down the stretch, a point emphasized by Chris Dick's big block on Tyler Haas with a minute 39 left in the game. Dick was asked if Saturday's win was the best performance he'd seen from his teammates.
Considering it's the playoffs and considering we've met these guys, I've only been here 2 years, but I think we've met them in the last 4 years. So I think in terms of the situation, I think it probably was our best team effort. We had, I don't know, four guys, 15, 16, 17, 18 points. So that's really nice, and that's what we need to do going on if we want to continue to move on.
The series win means UBC is headed to the Canada West Final Four next weekend in Calgary, and they face the host Dinos in Friday's semifinal. Win, and they'll clinch a spot at the CIS Final 8 2 weeks later in Ottawa. We'll have Friday's semi for you here on CITR at 6 p.m. Pacific. The pregame show begins at 5:45 immediately following News 101. It was a much different story for the women's basketball team last weekend. UBC were blown out by Simon Fraser in two straight losses in their best-of-three Pacific Division final. UBC led 12-11 after the first quarter in Game 1, but never held a lead in the series after that, losing 64-45 on Friday and 81-57 in Game 2 Saturday. The Thunderbirds struggled in part due to the loss of second-year guard Devin Lisson. She injured her knee in practice earlier in the week and is out for the year. UBC assistant coach Carrie Watson on what's next for the Thunderbirds.
Well, I think at this point we know that it's a do-or-die situation again. And last weekend we were able to grit it out and we showed a lot of character, a lot of heart in that third game against Victoria. And I think that going into next weekend we're back to that same situation. We have to win or our season's done. And hopefully that gets the girls a lot more motivated to get things going and come out a lot harder. And if we do end up getting muscled around, that will just push people back and fight for it. And I don't think we fought for it. So hopefully next weekend with our season on the line, we're going to come out a lot tougher.
Despite losing to the Clan, UBC's dominance during the regular season assured them the wild card berth into the Canada West Final Four, which is also up on Burnaby Mountain next weekend. Three of the four will go on to the CIS Nationals the weekend after. UBC takes on Alberta in Friday's semi-final, and of course we'll have that for you here on CITR at 8 p.m. immediately following the men's game from Calgary. A win over the third-ranked Winnipeg Westmen on Friday night at the Canada West Final Four has given the UBC men's volleyball team a berth into the national championships in Laval next weekend. Steve Gotch led all players in Friday's semi with 17 kills, sending the Thunderbirds to Saturday's gold medal match against the Alberta Golden Bears. The underdog Birds were already without captain Andrew Bonner as the veteran stayed home in Vancouver, nursing a shoulder injury. Rookie Greg Nemansvedrit took his place. Despite keeping the score close in the first two sets, UBC found themselves down, with the number one ranked Bears winning 25-19 and 26-24. The third set wasn't any better for the Thunderbirds as Alberta hit an impressive 50%, easily taking the gold in straight sets with a 25-11 win. Gotch and Matt Labordé led all players with 11 kills each. UBC will now face Dalhousie in one of Friday's quarterfinal matches, with the first serve set for noon Pacific time. Winnipeg takes on McMaster, Alberta faces Montreal, and Thompson Rivers will play Laval in the other quarterfinal matches. The championship game will be played Sunday with a 1:30 start. The women's volleyball team is also heading to the national championships. They clinched a spot with a 5-set win over the number one ranked Manitoba Bisons Saturday night. After falling in 5 sets to Calgary Friday, the Thunderbirds were relegated to playing for the bronze, but still needed to win to advance to the nationals. Marissa Field led all players with 15 kills as UBC took down the host Bisons 15-12 in the final frame after falling down 1-0. UBC will try to take the national title this weekend at the University of New Brunswick in Fredericton. UBC faces Sherbrooke at 11 a.m. Pacific on Thursday in the first round. After a tough regular season that started with much promise, the UBC men's hockey team was bounced from the playoffs this weekend, losing 2 straight games to the Manitoba Bisons. The fifth-seeded Birds played a disastrous first match, losing 6-0. Jerry Festa was chased from the net early after allowing 4 goals through 24 minutes, with Francois Thouault entering in relief. Saturday night started much better for the Birds as Craig Lineker scored at the 10:56 mark of the first to put UBC up by 1. But the Bisons stormed back in the second, scoring 4 straight goals of their own, putting the game and the series away. Kevin Seibel scored UBC's second of the night with 80 seconds left in relegation, but it was too little too late as the Thunderbirds' season is now over. The game was the last for 8 graduating seniors: Graham Shepherd, Peter Mandoli, Brad Zanin, Chris Curran, Kevin Seibel, Jordan Burns, Ashley Todd, and Lance Morrison. The 2008 CIS Swimming Championship was hosted next door at the UBC Aquatic Center over the weekend. The Calgary Dinos took their best shot at breaking the Thunderbirds' 10-year dynasty, but came away with only 1 of 2 championship banners. CITR's own Jason Wang reports.
The UBC Thunderbirds women's swimming team are the defending national champions for the 11th consecutive year in a performance capped off by a record-breaking win in the 400-meter medley relay. UBC and Calgary had each of their freestyle anchor leg swimmers jump in the water at the same time, 3 minutes 10 seconds into the race. Fifth-year senior Stephanie Nichols would go on to seal the victory for the T-Birds, swimming the final 100 meters in 54.66 seconds, beating the Dinos' Katie Murdoch by a body length. The Thunderbirds' medley relay team sets the new 400-meter Canadian record with a time of 4 minutes 4.95 seconds, eclipsing the mark set by last year's UBC contingent. As for Stephanie Nichols, she punctuates her CIS career with a gold and a silver in the freestyle sprint races. But the win she's most proud of is the medley relay.
I just did it for the team. Like,